Thought Bubble Audio.
Look, up in the sky!
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Welcome to Beer with Geeks with Tim and Frank.
Who are you?
I'm Batman.
I am Iron Man.
Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
My name is Inigo Montoya.
You're a wizard, Harry.
A couple of guys with a couple of beers and a whole lot of pop culture nostalgia.
Make it so, number one.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
Name the dog Indiana.
Life finds a way.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Now sit back and crack open a cold one. Because it's time for Beer with Geeks.
It comes in pints?
Shaken, not stirred.
Great Scott!
I was way off. I knew it started with an S, though.
Hi, and welcome to Beer with Geeks, where two geeks geek out with beer. I'm Tim, and with me, as always, is my Force holographic friend, Frank. How are you today?
I'm good. It's good to be talking to you over Force time today.
It is. What a wonderful Force time. What a wonderful Forced time we are having today, where we force ourselves to come together every week and do this.
It really, really is. It's wonderful.
It is. Happy, what are you drinking?
Happy Star Wars.
Happy Star Wars. What a wonderful time of the year it is. It's almost Christmas and it's Star Wars time.
Indeed.
For some people, it may be the worst time of year.
if you hate both those things.
Yes, if you hate one or both those things. What if you're a Scrooge McDuck?
Yeah.
Of the Star Wars universe. So, Frank, what are you drinking?
I think you mean Scrooge McPorg. I'm drinking a Sam Adams Old Fezziwig.
Oh, what a wonderful! I didn't even know you were drinking that. I made a Scrooge reference, and you're drinking a Fezziwig.
I know.
That's the best.
I know.
That's the best.
It is a winter warmer style beer, and it is wonderful.
That's excellent. I am not drinking anything
because
I am getting over pneumonia.
You are.
And I thought that an alcoholic beverage would not be such a great idea.
It might exacerbate things a little bit there, so you're probably doing best for your health. It's okay. No matter. Mm-hmm. I will drink enough for the both of us. So
thank you.
I'm a martyr that way. I like to take the fall for my friends.
You like to take the fall for the rebellion.
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's no beating around the. This is no beating around the porg here, Frank. Let's let's get right to it.
There's no beating around the Jedi tree.
No beating around the Jedi tree. I was like trying to think of some kind of shrubbery.
Shrubbery.
And I was like, dude, no, the Jedi tree, the force sensitive tree.
Yeah. Let's just say this at the outset. Spoilers for The Last Jedi are about to come out your ear holes like crazy. So
many ear holes.
Yeah.
All two of them.
Both of your ear holes. Just so many spoilers coming into them. So just get ready. If you have not seen The Last Jedi, I must say that if you have not seen The Last Awakens, if you've not seen The Last Jedi, now's the time to stop listening until you have seen it.
Indeed. Okay, so Frank, what did you think of The Last Jedi? Actually, let's disclaimer here. We've already talked about this as friends.
That's
in
true.
We had a fairly in-depth conversation. We both have seen it twice.
Yes.
Yes. And we had a fairly in-depth conversation after the first viewing of it. And it's probably the same kind of conversation that many people had after watching the film the first time. So I'm very intrigued to talk about it with you as a second time viewer.
Me too.
Did your opinions change? So after your first viewing, what was it like?
After my first viewing, I loved it. I knew that I loved it. I knew that there were things that were different. I knew from the start that it was very unique in a lot of ways in terms of Star Wars films. It did a lot of things that Star Wars movies don't typically do. Flashbacks and things like that, for instance.
Sure.
And the pacing of it and the editing and things like that. There were lots of things we'll get into. So I knew that I thought it was very different, and yet I still really, really enjoyed it. Which for me is... I don't always like change a lot. Change can be hit or miss for
scary.
Me.
Yeah,
it is scary. But I thought that all the changes that Rian Johnson made, most of them, not all of them, but many of the changes that Rian Johnson made, I thought were... justified and wise and interesting storytelling and an interesting swerve for the franchise. And I maintain that opinion after my second viewing. But what was your opinion after your first viewing and second?
I liked it very much after my first viewing, with reservations. I couldn't quite put my finger on it either.
Yeah.
And then after my second viewing, I pretty much felt the same. I walked out kind of going, yeah, I do like this movie. And I really have to think about this movie. I have to think about it.
Sure.
I didn't really have to think about The Force Awakens. I was kind of like, I've seen you, you know. And I've like come to like, I've almost like grown to appreciate The Force Awakens like over the last 2 years. But this movie, I walked out of going, oh, that was different. And I think I liked it. I did like it, but I have to see it again. And so now that I've had, you know, a number of days to kind of really think about it, I really liked this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seeing it a second time and then discussing it with friends, reading articles about it, reading reviews of it, the more I think about it, the more appreciation I gain for it.
I saw an excellent tweet, and I don't remember who put it out, and I think it summed up my like mixed feelings at first about it. Was like, are people mad about The Force Awakens because it's a bad movie, or are they mad about The Force Awakens because all of your theories were wrong?
Oh, I think I saw the tweet as well. Yeah, yeah, it's true. It's like, are you just mad because your Snoke theory was wrong? Like,
and I honestly think that's what a lot of it is. Like, okay, so I'm going to equate this to, like, if we were seeing Star Wars for the first time in 1977.
Okay.
I've been thinking about this a lot, okay?
Okay.
Even though this one is very, you know, this is a deconstruction of Star Wars, right? It's
right.
A deconstructionist film. We're going to look at Star Wars from a completely different angle. When Star Wars says we go right, we're going left. Every
yes.
single time.
Yes,
that's
yes.
what we're doing here. But I was really thinking about this. That's what Empire Strikes Back did, too.
Yes.
Okay? Oh, and because if you go to Star Wars and in 1977 and you love it and it's amazing, and then The Empire Strikes Back is coming out and you're like, oh my god, what crazy adventures are the princess, the smuggler, and the hero gonna get into this time, you know, like what fun they're gonna have together, and how many stormtroopers are gonna chase them, and like thinking about the high swashbuckling nature of Star Wars, because
yes.
that's what Star Wars is. It's a swashbuckling adventure series. And you go watch The Empire Strikes Back, and you get that at the beginning. You know, there's the attack on Hoth and all
yeah.
that stuff. But then most of your main heroes spend the film hiding in an asteroid.
Yeah.
And then your other main hero isn't with them at all, and he spends 3/4 of the movie, maybe let's say half of the movie, let's say not Hoth in the end. So he spends half the movie talking to a puppet and a droid. And
yes.
he's lifting rocks and seeing himself as Darth Vader, and it's all kind of weird and trippy, and it's telling you new things about the Force that is in some ways a little bit counter to what you learned about the Force in the first movie.
Sure.
And then you learn that Darth Vader is Luke's father, and you're like, oh my, do I believe him? Is he lying? He's probably lying. I don't think that's true. That can't be true. That doesn't
that's
make
impossible.
Any sense. That's impossible. Right. You take Luke's standpoint on that. And so, and then only with Return of the Jedi do all those pieces kind of fit together.
Right.
But then even with Return of the Jedi, you're watching like the completion of the hero's journey for some of these characters. But again, they spend the whole middle section talking to a bunch of teddy bears. And then the Emperor shows up and you have zero information on the Emperor. Who is this guy? Where does he come from? How can he shoot lightning out of his fists? You know, like, how does he have such control over Darth Vader? You don't have any of those questions. We take the prequels for granted and how many questions are answered. Like, the concept of the Jedi in the Sith doesn't happen until The Phantom Menace.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, if you're just watching the films, you don't know anything about that. And so, like, so much of The Last Jedi is The Empire Strikes Back that way, where it is, you thought it was going to be high swashbuckling adventure because that's what The Force Awakens told you it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Just like that's what A New Hope told you it was going to be. But then we took a hard left and we're not, and we're new ground. And Empire scared people when they saw it. It was very divisive the same way. And that, and only in retrospect do people go, wow, this is the great, this is the good one, this is the best one.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's going to happen for The Last Jedi.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there. I think you're definitely right in that. I think people will need to, so there are expectations that are being thrown off, I think deliberately, by Rian Johnson in this mm-hmm. film. And I also think you're right that by episode 9, a lot of this movie will be in context, in a different context than we can yep. maybe really see right now, because we're only seeing mm-hmm. 2/3 of the story.
That's right.
And so I think that, yeah, I think that that will color in some things that we don't realize are in black and white right now, let's say, and that people will gain appreciation for it. Now, I think there are some folks that don't enjoy this movie and may never enjoy this movie, and it wasn't for them, and that's really rough. Because I certainly know what that's like with, you know, the Snyder mm-hmm. movies, yeah. you know, up, Justice League I enjoyed, but up until then I was sort of like, this universe of characters I like, but it's not and, made for me.
Justice League is basically your Force Awakens. It's your crowd pleaser nostalgia. You know mm-hmm. what to expect going in, and you got exactly what you expected walking out.
Yeah, exactly. It's much more like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas Star Wars up until now has been, well, you know, up until 2005, it was helmed by George Lucas. And then with The Force Awakens, we definitely lost. I think some fans were turned off by it for sure. I think we know that.
I have some friends that yeah. refuse to watch Star Wars now.
Yeah. So we know people who lost their appetite for Star Wars since Disney took over. But by and large, The Force Awakens, the biggest criticism was, oh, it's just retreading old ground. But nobody felt like this is a bad movie. Not nobody, but relatively few people felt like this is a bad movie. I don't like Star Wars anymore. Compared to what we're hearing about The Last Jedi.
It's a smaller crowd.
It was a smaller crowd of people who were turned off to Star Wars altogether. The Last Jedi seems to be bringing people out of the woodwork who feel like that's it. Disney killed Star Wars. That's they don't understand it. And I'm hearing mostly positivity, yep. at least from the people that I talk with and listen to and read their articles and things like mm-hmm. that. But there definitely is some negativity, a good amount of it. And like the look at the Rotten Tomatoes audience score, if you need any proof of that.
There were several, like tons of fake accounts created to lower the score.
So that's interesting. That is interesting. Right now it sits at 93% on the critics side and 56% on the audience side.
It's got like a Ghostbusters thing going for it, like a remake, you know, like we hate this, so let's lower the score.
I see. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that doesn't particularly surprise me. So that makes sense. I wonder what the actual rating would have been without that then. But regardless, right now it says 56%. I think some of the biggest complaints that I've heard are things like, I wanted Rey's parents to be somebody. I wanted to find out who Snoke was. And did we know who the Emperor was before? Like
that's
the prequels? Did we have any idea?
You didn't. You had no information on the Emperor except that his one reference in A New Hope is he dissolved the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, he knew some stuff in a hood from Empire Strikes Back. He was a hologram, and everything has gone as he has foreseen, and he's got some lightning, but you don't know anything about him, like literally nothing except his name.
And
they don't really even
matter.
Call him Emperor Palpatine. They call him the Emperor.
The Emperor. Yeah, he's not Palpatine. Maybe we got one Palpatine reference. Maybe we got that name. Yeah. I don't think we even did.
Yeah. There's no Darth Sidious, no. Like Sith. Like Darth is just Darth Vader's name for all you know.
Right. I mean, in A New Hope, Obi-Wan calls him Darth.
Yep.
Like, as if
right.
it was his name. You can't win
right.
Darth.
Exactly.
So that clearly wasn't decided on until a bit later. And the Sith were, like you said, were not really a thing. Until the prequels. So
right.
I'm saying all that to say sometimes it just doesn't matter. Like sometimes who the Emperor is really didn't matter in the original trilogy. Yes, it's good to have the backstory. Yes, you can read novels. Yes, the prequels filled that all in for us. But it wasn't super necessary to know who the Emperor was. You can watch the original trilogy and never find out. Like never watch the prequel trilogy and be fine.
I think the difference is because I remember walking out of the film, I wanted to know more about Snoke.
Because
Star Wars has a very vast mythology, and the original trilogy was still in it was still in the groundwork of building it. It was just the films,
right?
You know, you didn't have anything else, except for Splinter of the Mind's Eye. Basically, yeah. That's all you had.
Yeah, some Marvel comics,
right? So, so I think, you wanted to know, because now you know about the Sith and the Rule of Two and this stuff. So
yes.
There's a natural inclination to wonder about. All right, who is this guy?
Right.
Who ultimately doesn't matter now.
And yet, I think that what's really fueling all this upset, though, is kind of just internet culture and this idea that we've talked about it in thousands of Reddit threads and in hundreds of tweets and in podcasts and in blog posts and everything else. We've talked about it with each other on the internet, right? And now we've built up this hype in our minds of who could Snoke be? Maybe he's the Emperor come back. Maybe he's Darth Plagueis. Maybe he's this. Maybe he's that. And then we feel like we are owed an explanation because we've spent so much time speculating. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing that I think is maybe what's upsetting people is we remember that, we're not owed anything. Rian Johnson doesn't owe us really a thing. Rian Johnson
is
making...
He owes us a movie.
But he's not beholden to us. And people might disagree with that, but... He doesn't owe us really an explanation of who Snoke is or who Rey's parents are. We line up, we pay our money to watch the movie, and we are watching an art exhibit. It's like going to a museum and being upset that the artist didn't make, the painting you wanted.
Yes.
That's fine.
Mary doesn't look like that.
Yeah, whatever. You can be upset that that's not, you didn't get what you wanted, but the artist made what they wanted to make.
Exactly.
So that's sort of my feeling on it, is that we can be upset about it, but I'd rather enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I'd rather enjoy it
Part of that is our general disposition, I think, but it's also because I think we agreed with the choices made.
I definitely agree with most of the choices, yes.
Because you said earlier that you can understand being on the other side, being not a fan of the Snyder version of the DC Universe, and you were right there going, this is not right, this is not this is not, you've got it wrong. And that's just what people are doing, and they have absolutely every right to express that opinion.
For sure.
But I think the difference is that we can watch Man of Steel or whatever and be like, I know that Superman is not a killer. That's part of the core of his character, that he's not going around snapping necks, even though there's some precedent for it in the comics. That is not generally the correct view of the character.
Right.
Whereas here, I think people have a huge, especially when it comes to Luke Skywalker, I think people have a huge misunderstanding of that character.
I don't know if I'd call it a misunderstanding. I think that might even, because it is, I think you're making a good comparison with, in the comics, we have source material. We can say, here is what this movie is based on, this source material. And if it conflicts in some way with source material, then we can point to that and say, that is a conflict.
Right.
Here, it's a continuation of an existing franchise. So it's more touchy-feely, a little more opinion-based.
Film is the source material.
The films are the source material. So when they make an eighth film in this series, and you say, well, that's not how this character acted in chapters 4, 5, and 6 of this saga.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay, but it's a little more subjective because it's but there's 30 years have passed, and he's different now than he was then. And
it's funny because I disagree. I think he acts exactly like he does in 4, 5, and 6.
In some ways, yes. In many ways.
He's grumpy, sure, and he's not idealistic or whatever, but he has, again, aged, 30 years,
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I see a through line between 4, 5, and 6, and here we are in 8. I can see how he got from A to B.
Well, let's talk about, people are upset that he almost murders Ben Solo in the training.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's well established that Luke Skywalker is a killer.
That's not
a question. He blows up the Death Star.
Right.
Thousands of people were on that thing.
Kevin Smith will tell you.
Yeah, he just hacks and slices his way on Jabba's barge, like
right.
in Return of the Jedi. He is a killer. There's no question about
right.
that.
Yeah, he kills
Everybody
for
in Star
good,
Wars is a
right?
killer. Right.
He kills for
right.
good, but
he's a swashbuckler.
Yeah. Right.
right, of
and,
course.
And if you and he was ready to kill Darth Vader.
That's it. Return of the Jedi, he is hacking away. He is 100% ready to kill his father. And he's even ready. He's even attempting to kill Darth Vader in Empire Strikes Back.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why he leaves Dagobah to go
right.
kill Darth Vader.
To go kill Darth Vader.
So, the idea that that's like too far, he wouldn't kill his own nephew or whatever. Well, if he thought he was this, the second coming of Darth Vader, he might.
He might. It's the greater good. It's the, this is like the, three people on one track and one person on another track.
Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah.
It's utilitarianism.
The trolley allegory.
Utilitarianism, it's the greater good. And Luke, for a moment, thought, okay, what's the greater good here?
Yeah.
But then it was too late. So he creates his own problem, which is very interesting. But I think that by creating his own problem, he sees that as it is his ultimate failure. But Luke is full of himself. He's always been. Going back all the way to A New Hope when he's like, oh, well, I used to shoot, Womp Rats on my T-16 back home. They're not bigger than 2 meters.
Right, right.
He is 100% full of himself. He tells you right away that he can do and what he says he's going to do and blow up the Death Star. He's got a big head, like his father. And so I 100% believe that he buys into the legend of Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, right. he bought in. He bought his own hype. He believed his own hype, and then he falls from grace because of it. He lets down his apprentice, and he regrets it.
So when he talks about to Rey, when he's giving her these lessons, and he's like, the Jedi failed because of their hubris. He's talking about not only like the prequel Jedi, he's talking about himself.
Yeah,
like twice the Jedi Order has failed because of their hubris. They are too big for their britches. And so when Yoda says no, throw it, throw it out, there's nothing in those books that Rey doesn't already know or have. Yoda's saying, yeah, like the way the structure of the Jedi Order doesn't matter. It's all about the Force, and everybody gets away from that.
The other thing Yoda is saying is literally, I know already that Rey has the books, so you're good.
Also that, yeah, which is great.
I didn't realize, actually, not even on my second viewing did I realize that's literally what Yoda was saying. I actually had to have it pointed out to me by a friend who was like, yeah, he was saying to Luke, he was letting Luke believe that the books were being destroyed because mm-hmm. he knew that Rey had the books. So when he says she has everything she needs, there's a double meaning to that.
She literally has
what she needs.
That's
beautiful. Also, he's just trying to teach Luke the lesson by letting him think that he's burned the books and that they've burned everything down. Like, leave everything behind. Leave the past behind. Let failure, learn the lessons of failure.
Right, that's literally the whole movie.
Learning the lessons of failure. Right, Finn and Rose fail in their mission. Poe fails.
Poe's in his mission, right. That's what I think is getting people with this movie, too, because in another Star Wars movie, these super heroics, bombing the
Dreadnought.
The Dreadnought and all that, those are things that you get medals for in
right.
a regular Star
right.
Wars movie.
You would get a throne room ceremony.
Right, but here in this almost quote unquote realistic Star Wars film, it's not, sometimes it's about working with the group because it's all about everything's about rebelling within the system. And that's what the whole movie's about, rebelling within the system. And then the system, some systems crumble because of that and some don't. So Luke is rebelling against the system. By being on his own, Rose, Poe, and Finn, and then that little conglomerate of resistance fighters start a rebellion within the rebellion. It's like a snake eating its own tail,
yeah.
And they again also fail at that rebellion. And then Kylo killing Snoke is him rebelling against the system, and it's all these characters are. learning their lessons from failure, and then the rebels ultimately learn that they have to work together in tandem, and that's how they're going to survive. And Luke learns that failure is the greatest teacher, and that's how you move forward. You don't wallow in the failure. You rise up and become something better from it.
Totally. I completely agree. That's what this movie is about. And that's, so I think there are things that don't seem that, there were things in this movie that didn't interest me that much. Like the whole Finn and Rose story in the moment was exciting. Mm-hmm. Right? Because sure. It was like, okay, I told you this off mic. I felt like I spent a good chunk of the beginning of this movie wondering what's our like Death Star mission going to be? Like, what's our like singular mission that's going to bring us into Act 3, and then the Rebels, Resistance will fight the First Order. Like, what is the thing that's going to lead us to that? And I thought there would be, you know, a Death Star type battle, or a Cloud City type battle, something like that, that we were heading towards. And it didn't exactly pan out the way I thought. I believed that Finn and Rose finding the Master Codebreaker and all of that, and disabling the stuff on the ship, that I thought that was going to be the mission. And that was one of the many places where Rian Johnson took a left turn and said, nope, not happening. And and turns out that DJ is Orlando and all of this.
But ultimately does not come back to help them or save the day at the end.
But doesn't turn out to be good in the end. But he does get caught and ends up betraying them.
Yep, and he gets his big boxes of money like Han, and he moves on.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. So I found that to be interesting. So when I thought that that was going to be the main plot and the thing that was going to save us, I was like tense and on the edge of my seat and excited for what was going to happen. And then when that turned out not to be the case, I was like, so this was kind of all for naught. Okay, what? So it all ended up sort of, I thought, like, well, that didn't move anything forward then. Like, what really happened? But it really is about that failure aspect and learning from that failure. And I think that going into episode 9, that lesson is going to be important.
Yep, I agree.
Above anything else. Certainly Poe and his lesson of learning to be more of a team player and learning to not sacrifice the whole fleet for one ship, and these kinds of things. I think that's going to be very important to him. There's clearly a passing of a torch with Leia in that cave saying, like, what are you looking at me for? Follow him. That was a sort of passing of a torch where now he's going to be the resistance leader. I think Finn will be some kind of a general or some kind of leadership role as well.
It's funny that you say that, because the interesting thing about Finn is that he doesn't really have a place yet. This movie is about him learning to become part of something. You know, like,
yes,
you know, he runs from the First Order. He tries to run from the little ragtag group in The Force Awakens. And then even when they go to help the Death Star and stuff, he's there just to help Rey. He's not even there for the Resistance. And so this movie is him learning to care about the greater good.
Because he was about to run when Rose caught him.
He was going
to
run away again.
This time it was to get the tracker away so Rey wouldn't, you know, come into a trap. But
but he's still running, and it's all about Rey. Those are his two things. And so now, like, when he's fighting Phasma, and then he rises up on the platform and she says, you're scum. And he's like, rebel scum.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's his moment to, like, he's part of the fold now.
That's his rebirth.
But I'd be curious to see, like, what is his then purpose moving on? Cause that's his personal growth. But what is his purpose in the story then from there?
And that's what episode 9 will tell us.
Right. Cause ultimately, it's funny because he had a purpose in Force Awakens, and Poe really didn't, and that's kind of reversed itself here, where Poe had a grand purpose, and probably will continue to have that, and so we'll be curious what comes of that for Finn, and then of course Rey and her learning that she comes from nothing, or at least accepting that she comes from nothing, which I think is a big slap in the face to, like, fans, because they were talking for years of who's raised parentage. But the film never really gives you that indication that she has famous parents.
No, or... it doesn't. It just we assumed that, I think, because she was force sensitive. So it was
sure, but so were hundreds of Jedi.
Well, that's the thing. I think we've kind of, I think many people may have lost sight of that. And I had a thought today, and I haven't really thought this through all the way. So you or listener, I'm sure, will tell me if I'm totally off base. But you know, is it possible that the people who are most offended by that concept that you know her parents are nobody are people who are not such big fans of the prequels? Because to me, that was a totally acceptable notion, because we saw hundreds of Jedi, right? They were not all Skywalkers. They were not even all human. So, and we know that the Jedi were taking these kids in when they were very young, when they were proven to be force sensitive from a young age, and training them to be Jedi. So they were from families all over, and knowing that the Jedi were not meant to marry and have kids, that means that they were not descendants of other Jedi.
Sure.
So they were, in most cases, probably like the first of their family who was somewhat force sensitive. Mm-hmm. Their parents were all kinds of people, were essentially nobodies, and mm-hmm. they would be trained as Jedi. She's just another one of those, just right. like that kid in the stable.
What I think it's, so when you said not a fan of the, I think that's a good point, but I also think it's reverse, where maybe the people who are panning that she is a family from nobody is because they are fans of the prequels, and so you watch six films about somebodies, about the Skywalkers.
Okay, yeah, okay.
And then so when your main antagonist all of a sudden is not a Skywalker, you're like, or your main protagonist is not a Skywalker, you're like, whoa, 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 what do you mean Star Wars isn't about the Skywalkers anymore? Which is not entirely true, because Ben is a Skywalker, Kylo yeah. is a Skywalker, but I think people also, for whatever reason, forget that Luke is not the quote unquote the chosen one.
Right.
Anakin was. Is the chosen one. Mm-hmm. And so it's Anakin that brought balance to the Force with the help of his son reminding him. But it's Anakin that killed the Emperor and died. And so the legacy, the importance of the Skywalkers ends at Return of the Jedi. You know, and so Luke's last kind of heroic moment is important because it continues like the hope and inspiration. He is literally the new hope, right? You know, again, you know, he's the new hope of the original trilogy, and now he's the new hope again of the he's the spark again of the rebellion. But that's it. But that's where it's got to continue with somebody else from there. So I like that she has come from nobody. But again, this debate, people are like, oh, maybe Kylo's lying. Maybe he's not. Rian Johnson said the information that he had, he was told by the Star Wars Story Committee, is that she comes from nobody.
Yeah, and I believe that. And it's consistent with the rest of that movie. If you really break it down, it's consistent with the rest of the movie that she would be from nobody.
Right.
It fits in. So, because it's all about like learning from failure. It's all about the little guy being just as good as, I mean, Luke talks about the Force and that it's not just a thing Jedi have, how much hubris it would take for the Jedi mm-hmm. to presume that they are the only ones, the keepers of the Force.
Right. And that the Force goes away when the Jedi go
away.
When
the Jedi are gone. It's so woven into the fabric of this story that it makes sense that her family would be just average people.
Luke also basically tells us that the movie is not going to go the way that
we think.
He says it even in the trailer, which was kind of like, I wonder if they did that on purpose. Like,
yeah,
this is not going to go the way you think. And it didn't. And then apart from that, he flat out tells Rey, what do you think? I want to show up with my laser sword and take on the Empire single handed? Because that's what we all went into The Last Jedi thinking what was going to happen.
He's talking. Rian Johnson is talking to us.
Through these characters. I agree.
The other thing, I read an article today on Slash Film, interview with Rian Johnson, mm-hmm. and he made a really, really important point. He said, okay, when you look at Vader saying, I am your father in Empire Strikes Back, it's so powerful because that's the hardest thing that Luke could hear in that moment, right? He's ready to mm-hmm. take down his enemy and strike him down, kill him, and then suddenly, but I'm your dad. Oh, crap. Wait, that changes everything. Do I really want to kill my father? That adds a whole other layer of difficulty onto things, right? Mm-hmm. That's what's so powerful about that moment, or one of the things that's so powerful about that moment. Mm. In this movie, Rey flat out says to Luke, I need you to show me my place in all of this. Mm. If she were told your place is you are Obi-Wan Kenobi's granddaughter, that would be it.
Who dat?
Well, yeah. Yes. Yeah. But also, like, it'd be like, that would be the answer she's looking for. The harder thing for her is to find out she is nobody and she still needs to find who she is in all this. Just like it was mm-hmm. harder for Luke to hear, I am your father, than anything else. It's harder for her to hear, you're nobody. And now you need to decide, are you going to go with Kylo or are you not? Like, that's the harder, that's the more interesting, the more
so
difficult thing
yeah.
for this character to hear. And so in a way, it's what it had to be,
mm-hmm.
at least for the story that Rian Johnson decided to tell. And he did say in this Slash Film article, I'm going to put it in our show notes at beerwithgeeks.com, he did say that he was not told who her parents needed to be. He and JJ talked, but JJ didn't say, like, oh, by the way, this is who her parents are. They're nobody. It was up to him. It was up to Rian Johnson to decide, and he pitched this idea of what if she's just an average person, and it was approved because it fit the story.
Yep, I'm 100% on board with that. Let's talk about a few fun things.
Yes. Many fun things.
Some fun behind-the-scenes things. One, BB-8 has the I've got a bad feeling about this line.
Yeah, which I didn't even realize mm-hmm. until I was told after.
Yep, when he and Poe are first going to the Dreadnought to confuse General
Hux. Is that when it is? Okay.
Yeah, what a great... I love that BB-8 has that line. What a great idea.
That's great.
Second, that big joke between, you know, like holding for General Hux, you know, like
yep.
I'll hold
Hux with an H.
That to me reminded me of the reverse of the everything's fine here, it's fine. How are you?
Yeah.
It's literally like the other side of the conversation.
It is, right?
Yeah. which I also thought was great. The Yoda was a real puppet
yes.
made from the original molds from Empire Strikes Back.
Really? That's awesome.
Frank Oz even came in to teach the new puppeteers how to move him.
Oh, that's great.
And the woman who originally painted Yoda or made his eyes or whatever made his eyes for this one. That being said, he didn't look quite right to me. His mouth was weird.
On my second viewing, it bothered me less. I didn't notice it as much.
Same. But
on my first viewing, something looked off. From the second viewing, decided it was the lighting. I feel like there was some funny lighting mm-hmm. that he didn't look like Dagobah Yoda.
But he was the Dagobah puppet, and so
right.
it didn't like exactly mesh like with the lighting uh-huh. and yeah uh-huh. that's exactly
I think it was
right.
the way the light caught his wrinkles and the folds in his skin mm-hmm. looked a little funny, and that's
yeah,
but and I feel like it might also be one of those things that on a TV doesn't look as blatant as it does on a movie screen.
Agreed. I love that he was kind of impish Yoda, like
yes.
because because that's the Yoda that Luke knows.
Yes,
he doesn't know serious prequel Yoda. He knows, like, can I have this flashlight? I'll
yeah,
look at
yeah,
my
yeah.
butt. You know,
mine.
Yeah,
who's that,
that
Yoda?
That's the Yoda he knows. So it's important for him to like have the Yoda that's going to come and hit him over the head with a stick.
Right.
You know, because that's the Yoda he knows. Young Skywalker, still looking to the past. You are
yes, yes,
always
yes.
Always to the horizon, the future. You know, like that's the Yoda that he knows. Very interesting that Yoda can call down lightning from the sky.
Hey, you know what? I don't that kind of thing used to bother me, but then I realized, like, you know what? If by that logic, then in the second, you know, in Empire, when they started lifting rocks, I should have been like, you never did that in the first movie. That's out. That's not allowed.
That's
it's like,
exactly
things...
true. There's a new, there's literally a new force power introduced
in like
every single
movie.
Film.
So like
yeah.
at this point, whatever. Leia can fly through space. Okay, whatever.
That bothered me when I was watching it. People are really upset about that. I loved that.
I thought it was silly, to be honest.
I think it looks silly, but I love the concept of her like not being a Jedi, but still being strong with the Force and being a smart enough woman to be like, this is a useful tool.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use this to survive because I've had 30 years of knowing that I'm Force sensitive.
It makes sense that in a moment of extreme duress, she's able to summon all her Force power. It depletes her. It almost kills her. But mm-hmm. but she's able to summon all the power she has, tap into the Force, and save herself. I definitely thought when I saw that happen, I thought, oh, my goodness, did they add this? Like, did they add this to when I saw her get pulled out of that ship, I was like, did they add this as a way to get her out of the movie? And then I saw her obviously fly in Mary Poppins style, and I was like, okay. So I guess this was always part of it. Interesting.
They could have chosen to end it there. The way it was shot, but I kind of... You know what? I don't think so, because I think it's so important that she come back to kind of teach Poe his final lesson.
It is. It is important.
And I think it's important that Luke and Leia reunite, even for a moment, because you do not get the Han-Luke reunion.
Yes.
And so I think it's very important that Luke and Leia have this moment as brother and sister together where he kisses her correctly.
I agree. Yes, I agree with that. I agree with that. That end sequence on Crait, mm-hmm. with Luke in particular, once Luke gets there, was just there were two things that really, really got me excited in this movie. One was when Rey and Kylo were fighting in that throne room, taking down all the Praetorian guards.
That was very
that
cool.
That was awesome. That was like some classic like Jedi, you know, like Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan fighting side by side, that kind of thing. That was great. But then that end scene which I on my first viewing was like, oh wow, that was a great lightsaber duel. I'm like, no, wait, they never clashed lightsabers because
not
Luke
once.
Wasn't there.
Yep. I actually wished they had hit once, because not really ever does a lightsaber hit another lightsaber in this movie, which is oddly troubling.
Oh God, this isn't going to be like the Superman never threw a punch in Superman Returns thing, is it? Lightsabers
kind of.
Never clashed.
It's kind of. I mean, there were lightsabers, but they never hit each other.
Never hit each other. It didn't bother me.
But I wished that Luke had at least like hit Kylo's lightsaber once, just to kind of like feel that impact,
yeah.
you know, in the
yeah.
theater. Because you know he can interact with the environment, because Force Ghost...
Well, he was able to touch Leia, kiss Leia, but then when he wants to be transparent, he can be.
Right. Well, I mean... Even Force ghosts interact with their environment. Like when Obi-Wan shows up in Return of the Jedi, he's got to push.
He sits on the log.
Brush. He's on the log and he pushes like brush and ferns out of the way to get there. Like,
and Yoda was able to hit Luke in this movie.
Right, exactly. So there's 100% full precedent for, you know, for that.
Force ghost materializing.
That Force ghost materializing is actually was introduced in Rebels, apparently.
Okay. Yeah.
Which I didn't know about. So it's like it's not even original to this film. Like it's in other Star Wars.
Yeah.
Canada.
No. Absolutely. It's a known thing. So you're right. It wouldn't be out of whack for him to like materialize for them to clash lightsabers at least once. Right. You're right.
But I love when Luke shows up at the end. I love that it's kind of like Luke's kind of vain, right?
Yes.
You know. So I love that. I love that he shows up in like quote unquote like the best version of himself that he can think of. You
yes.
know, his hair's cut, his beard's dyed, he's wearing kind of an amalgamation of Jedi robes and his black outfit from Return of the Jedi. It's a bit of both.
Yeah.
So he's got this thing going on. But then what I think, like, he doesn't have the green lightsaber, which I was really thinking about this because it kind of bothered me, because I was like, why have you, because like it's a very deliberate decision from Rian Johnson to give him the blue one.
Yes.
And I was really
the
thinking
one
about
we just
this.
Saw destroyed a
the
few
one
minutes
we
earlier.
Just saw destroyed. And I was like, why not use the green one? And then it hit him. I think he sees that lightsaber as a symbol of his failure, because he almost murders a child with it. He almost murders his nephew with that lightsaber. And so either he ditched it the way that he ditched Anakin's lightsaber when he threw it over his shoulder at the beginning of the movie, or it was taken by somebody when the Jedi Temple was destroyed, and so he just doesn't have it anymore, and somebody else has it.
But if it's all...
Or it's in R2-D2, either one.
Well, but, right. But if it's all force...
But my point is that it's his best version of himself. And so if he sees that green lightsaber as a symbol of his failure,
sure,
then he's going to use the weapon that he feels that he was his most heroic with.
Yes, I agree with that. I agree with that.
Yeah,
yes.
That's what I mean. Yeah, also, I think it's a bit of a taunt. Like, he knows Kylo wants that lightsaber. And so because he knows Kylo's trying to be his grandfather, so it would be a bit of a taunt to use that weapon against him.
Right, right.
Even
yeah, that's
showing
true.
It to him.
It's true. Well, and he definitely was taunting. I mean, he came back and he was, I think, what everybody wanted Luke Skywalker to be 30 years on. He was wise. He was powerful. He was, he comes in, he says a few words to Leia, right? He kisses her on the forehead. He winks at 3PO.
That was great.
Maybe the coolest thing Luke Skywalker has ever done. Most suave thing he's ever done is just wink it at 3PO and not even, like, barely even say a word, if he said a word at all.
He didn't say a word. He just
I don't think he did. I think 3PO said, Master Luke, and he just winked at him and walked on.
Great.
And then go out there, and just like he said earlier, what do you think I was going to do? Take out my laser sword and go up against the First Order? And that's exactly what he freaking does.
But with a left turn. Because
with a left
he's
turn,
really
he's not really there.
It's because he, by not being there, he is the illusion. He has the illusion of being even more powerful, and so like all that laser fire on him, and he's untouched. He brushes himself off. Also, super cool.
Another super cool thing.
Yeah,
yes,
he is untouched. That legend of Luke Skywalker continues on, even with those kids on Canto Bight, you know, and their kids literally got like a homemade Luke Skywalker action figure, and he is retelling the story of Luke Skywalker, who is the most powerful person in the universe.
Luke knows that's what he's doing. He says the rebellion is reborn today.
Yep. Yeah. It's not the resistance anymore.
It's the rebellion.
Yeah. I think that's an important distinction, which is good because I never really loved the resistance, quote unquote.
Yeah. I might as well just say the rebellion.
It's just the rebellion.
I wouldn't be. What if the next one's called Return of the Rebellion? Return of the Spark. They use that spark thing a lot. I thought that was so. It was an interesting choice to end with the kid with the broom, to end the film that way. But it was really important because it again shows the. It hammers home that point of the rebellion will be won by the little people, by the nobodies.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And the Force doesn't belong to the Jedi, it belongs to everybody. So this kid gets Force sensitive, and he may not be a Jedi, but he may be able to use the Force.
Yeah. Yep. I agree with all of that. It's a part of the deconstruction of Star Wars, you know, the commentary on, you know, the nature of storytelling inside the Star Wars universe and all of that. We're kind of over
for sure. Time. As we always are with these big ones.
Yes, but I think we could have more to say, so maybe we'll do another one when it comes out.
I think we should probably do one of our trademark commentaries once it hits.
Absolutely. I want to, there's two things I want to say. One, I love the relationship between Hux and Kylo, and I'm very intrigued to see where that's going.
Me too.
And two, what is your favorite character moment? Like, of any character, just like any little bit, what's your favorite character moment?
I was not prepared for this. I think I'm going to have to say when Luke says, yeah, that pretty much is nowhere.
That is a great moment. That is, where are you from, Jakku? Yeah, that's pretty much
nowhere. What's yours?
When it's raining on Acto, and Rey's got this big smile on her face, and she just sticks her hand out in the water. It's a really subtle, nice reminder of where she's come from.
It's from a desert planet.
And there's tons of great moments, like when the rock goes flying and the fish nuns, the force nuns, are like,
they're great.
There's some great stuff in here. We barely touched on this film, but I think we should definitely come back to it as
I agree.
A commentary. And so you can find us on beerwithgeeks.com and thoppableaudio.com and all other places that podcasts can be found. You can rate and review us on iTunes, which would be fantastic. And you can check us out on Google Play and Stitcher and all such places, Overcast and all such places podcasts can be found like that. You can also find us on Twitter and Gmail and Facebook at Beer with Geeks. And let us know what you think of The Last Jedi. That would be terrific. So, Frank, I think that wraps it all up.
I think so, too. I will catch you on Kanto Bite with an adult beverage another time.
Kanto Bite! Yeah. All right. Well, then, until next time,
cheers.